Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So we have a lot of drama to deal with at the University of Florida here leading into the game against Georgia on Saturday. And one of the things that I think is interesting about this drama is that it strikes a real contrast in between how Florida seems to be preparing for the game on Saturday and how Georgia seems to be preparing for the game. Georgia very much businesslike, the way that it has been the entire year, leading to a number three overall ranking. Florida 3-3, kind of scuffling along with some sideways energy. Maybe this week kind of an example of exactly why that's true. Let me start with something we talked about yesterday on AT&T SEC Country Live, that when Florida players met with the media, there was a lot of discussion about trash talk and what's going to happen against Georgia on Saturday. I don't know if we have these tweets that we can show you what some of the Florida players kind of said by way of the trash talk kind of leading into this game. We'll get to that one coming up in just a moment. But there was some challenges to Jake Fromm. There was some discussion, you know, about how Georgia doesn't not able to win in this series. That you know, Georgia may be the number three team in the country, but it can't go out there and beat Florida. You know, that's the discussion that the Florida players were having yesterday. And, you know, that's almost bad enough because that would seem to play right into the hands of Georgia, much the same way that Jonathan Abram did in the game against Mississippi State, and maybe some other examples of that this season, when some teams and some players gave Georgia some extra motivation that Georgia went out and feasted upon. It would seem in this case Chauncey Gardner and some of the other Florida players kind of doing that same thing with what they said to the media yesterday. And I know a lot of Georgia fans have had a good time with that. We've certainly exchanged some stuff back and forth on that on Twitter. But what is probably even worse than that, or I don't want to say the word worse, what's even more interesting than that, and certainly a more complicated story than that, is what Jim McElwain said yesterday. Because when McElwain took to the podium for his weekly press conference, well, he had a very interesting statement that he wanted to make about the criticism that has come to him and to his players and to the family of his players and his own family. And, well, he took this to kind of a dark place because apparently, according to McElwain, some of that criticism has gone too far. Here's what Jim McElwain said to the media yesterday.
You know, a pretty good kind of lesson for the way things are. You know, there's a lot of hate in this world and a lot of anger. And yet it's freedom to show it. And, you know, the hard part is obviously when the threats against your own players, the death threats to your families, the ill will that's brought upon out there. And yet, you know, I think it's really one of those deals that really is a pretty good testament to what's going on out there nationally. A lot of angry people in this business. We're the ones that you take the shots at, and that's the way it is.
So there you hear it. Donald Trump is to blame for Florida's 3-3 record. I'm kidding about that. But what's serious is the kind of stuff that Jim McElwain describes is the kind of thing that is very serious. And if true, the kind of thing that would be reprehensible for any college football fan base to be a part of. Taking disappointment about losses, disappointment about you know, setbacks during the season to such a dark, negative place where there are threats and horrible, nasty things being said on social media or wherever these messages are being received, that's obviously a terrible thing. And the media covering Jim McElwain rightly very concerned about what McElwain had to say, including one reporter who kind of followed up that statement by asking this, and here's McElwain's answer.
Were you shocked by the level of the vitriol? And
no, I think it's, you know, here's the one thing. You're in the business. That's all part of it. You get it. It's when it's directed towards your players, when it's directed towards families, wives, you know, that kind of thing. And yet, at the same time, they know what they signed up for as well. And that's part of the business.
So here's the point in which all Georgia fans and Florida fans can agree. And there's not much that Dog fans and Gator fans would be able to agree on this week, but this is a point in which everyone can agree. What Jim McElwain is describing is reprehensible. And what Jim McElwain is describing there is beyond the pale of what any college football fan ought to ever do, or any human being ought to do to another human being. That is a level of sort of subhuman behavior that McElwain's describing there, the way that people ought to treat people. if it indeed happened. And the reason why I have to kind of add that addendum to that statement, if it indeed happened, is because there's reason to wonder if everyone actually believes McElwain and takes him at face value with the description that he just gave of what he and his players have dealt with this season. Let me give you an example that proves my point. Here's a statement released by Steve McClain, the Florida Associate Athletic Director for Communications, about what went down. He says, this is McClain, the University Athletic Association takes the safety of our student-athletes, coaches, staff, and families very seriously. Our administration met with Coach McElwain this afternoon, and he offered no additional details. Now, the reading that I give you of what McClain says there about McElwain leading the game against Georgia is, McElwain's on his own. McElwain says there were threats given to coaches and players. While we take that stuff seriously, we don't have any details to add to what McElwain said today, and he didn't tell us anything else about this. He's kind of on his own about this, which sort of raises the eye of skepticism, both from someone like me, who's inclined to kind of joke about this, and someone else who may be inclined to kind of look seriously at why would McElwain exaggerate a story like this if it didn't go down exactly the way that he said it did. And at this point in time, I have to say something here. What McElwain said and what Florida's response was is not proof that this didn't happen. There is no proof that it didn't happen. But I think what is objectively true is that Florida kind of hung McElwain out to dry on this. And the question I think you're left to ask is, why would Florida do that to its coach? Why would Florida, through a statement, McElwain offered no additional details, we're going to let him sort of deal with this on his own, why would Florida hang Jim McElwain out to dry on something potentially as serious as this? Well, it could have been just an accident. It could have been a poorly worded statement that was intended to be supportive of McElwain, but was written in such a way that seemed to cast doubt about the support that McElwain got from his Florida administration. Or it could have been a situation where some Florida official said, you know what, whether this is true or not, it's a bad look for recruiting. This becomes negative recruiting against our program. This becomes the kind of thing that other programs are going to use against us. Hey, don't go to Florida. People are going to threaten you and say terrible things about you and your family when you lose. And maybe the Florida administrators, the people above Jim McElwain's head, wanted to squash all of that. One way or another, though, that would not seem to be the best way to prepare Florida for the game against Georgia on Saturday. And if you're a Georgia fan, here's the part where you really like this. It would certainly seem like Georgia, in terms of its preparation for the game this weekend, is going about its business in a much more business-like fashion in keeping with the way that Georgia's approached everything so far this season. Another example that proves my point. Let's listen to Kirby Smart from his weekly press conference yesterday. Obviously, we know that Georgia's had the long losing streak against Florida, and that's the kind of thing we talk about every day here on Dog Nation Daily. But how much is Kirby Smart letting that creep into the way that his team prepares this week? Well, when Kirby spoke to the media, he said they're kind of blocking all of that out right now. Here he is.
I think trends are pretty commonplace. I mean, it has a lot to do with who the quarterback is, who the defense is, who the players are. And at the end of the day, it boils down to players and guys making plays and not turning the ball over and how you respond to a little adversity, because in this game, it's traditionally been a seesaw-type game. So, I mean, I don't get too much into the who won last year, who won the year before that. It's a whole lot more about what we're going to do this year, because that's really all we can control.
Now, we're hearing stories that what Kirby Smart is telling to his team behind closed doors is a little bit different than the message that he's giving publicly behind closed doors. Apparently, he is making a little bit of a bigger deal about the game against Florida and a little bit of a bigger deal about what this means to his team. But Kirby Smart doesn't owe the media the opportunity to hear exactly about that, and he doesn't owe Florida the satisfaction of saying, yes, this is indeed what we're doing. What Kirby Smart's saying there and maybe doing privately is very much in keeping with what this team's been doing all season long, and it's worked out very well so far. And the very different weeks that Georgia and Florida they don't guarantee necessarily that Georgia's going to go out and coast an easy win in Jacksonville this Saturday, but it is a nice thing, I think, for Dog fans to see. Florida kind of spiraling sideways, caught up in drama, Georgia head down, focused on a much larger goal. That's the way the Dogs have looked all season long, and my guess is that'll also work out again Saturday as a recipe for victory. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Good to have you with us. Whether you're watching us on Facebook Live, of course, we're available each and every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. on the Dog Nation Facebook page. We are also for you on the radio if you're in the Athens area at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. We appreciate you being with us there on that program each and every day. And we'll post the show for you in podcast form pretty much wherever podcasts are found, including iTunes and the worldfamousdognation.com. We'll have that up for you just as soon as the show is done here live today, and you can enjoy the podcast version of Dog Nation Daily. We appreciate you being a part of that. Of course, if you're watching some video right now, you see me wearing the brand new red Gatorator t-shirt for our Dog Nation Invasion, courtesy of all of our terrific sponsors for that event. We're looking forward to giving you some of these on Saturday. We'll tell you more about that coming up. But I'm also wearing, in honor today, of our Gatorator countdown. We're now just 4 days away from the world's largest outdoor cocktail party in Jacksonville. We will be there for our Dog Nation Invasion. The red Gatorator t-shirts that I'm wearing, we'll be giving those out then at our Dog Nation Invasion tailgate, which starts at 10 a.m. Coming up this Saturday. Of course, we're going to have a Dixie Vodka tasting bar there for you, for those of you who are 21 and up. We're going to have four televisions, Jeff Sintel and I hanging out with you, watching all the early games there from Jacksonville. We're going to be at that touchdown lot, a part of the tailgaters parking. It's near gate 6 of the touchdown lot, right off Bryan Street. That's where we're going to be. So you can put that in and get ready to join us. And as I said, we'll have the brand new red Gator Hater t-shirts to give away while supplies last, courtesy of all of our sponsors, including our friends at Dixie Vodka, who are the South's best tasting vodka. You know, I say this all the time. A lot of debate when it comes to college football this time of the year in this part of the country, but there is no debate when it comes to the South's best tasting vodka. It is Dixie Vodka, made in the South by people from the South. For folks like you and me right here in the South, we love Dixie Vodka here on Dog Nation Daily. Now, I have a very special thing to tell you about as well before we move on with the rest of our show, including Jeff Sintel coming up in a couple of minutes. A lot of you have told me, hey, I would love to be able to get one of those red Gator Hater t-shirts. B.A., I'm a big Gator Hater, but I'm not going to be able to be in Jacksonville this weekend. But how can I get one of those red Gator Hater t-shirts? Here's the good news. Tonight, we have a very limited quantity, not a ton, because we have to save a lot of these for our folks in Jacksonville, because that's who we've promised them to. But our sponsors have allowed, including Marlowe's, one of our Dog Nation Invasion sponsors, our sponsors have allowed for us to give away some of these tonight at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. Now, we're going to be there tonight from 6 to 8 p.m. Please put this address into your navigation. If you're watching this on video, you can see it on. If you're listening in podcast form or on the radio, you can write this down. It's 3575 Durden Drive. That's 3575 Durden Drive right there for the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. If you come up to me tonight and say, hey, Brandon, you said you're going to have some red Dog Nation Daily Gatorator t-shirts to give away while supplies last, limited quantity, only a few of these tonight, but we'll try to give you a red Gatorator t-shirt. So make sure you get there early, find me early, and we'll try to give a few of those away tonight at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven for our Dog Nation Big Game Preview. Jeff Sintel going to be with us there tonight as well, and he's going to be with us here in a moment also. All right, let me transition here and discuss the game against Florida a little bit more before we bring on Jeff Sintel to the program. You know, we were talking to start the show about Chauncey Gardner and what Gardner had to say about Jake Fromm yesterday, basically mocking him, saying all he does is throw slant passes, that he's essentially unimpressed with him as a quarterback. And that probably leads to an important question of how Fromm will perform against Florida on Saturday. After all, in a year of a lot of firsts for this freshman quarterback, this is the latest first that he'll kind of go into. His first game in Jacksonville against the Florida Gators and against a defense that's been pretty good here in the past. And Kirby Smart, as you might imagine, was asked yesterday if he thought his freshman quarterback would be equal to that challenge of going out and playing Florida. And here's how Kirby Smart answered the question.
I think anytime you've got a true freshman starting, it's challenging. I think this kid's grown. He's gotten better each week. I hope that continues through the bye week. I mean, but you referenced Jacksonville. I think what makes it challenging is the Florida defense that happens to be in Jacksonville. It's not just the fact we're playing in Jacksonville, it's that we're playing against a caliber of defense that has been really, I mean, over the last 10 years, they've been, you know, one of the best defenses in the country. So you look at what they've done, the players they've had, the style of defense they play. They're attacking. They're aggressive. I think Coach Shannon, Randy Shannon, does a great job with them.
And in addition to that defense, it not only makes things tough on a quarterback, but what potentially makes Fromm's job more challenging on Saturday is the way that the Florida defensive front, a group that is still pretty good. The rest of this Florida defense, probably not as good as it used to be, but this Florida defensive front, still pretty good. And what makes it tougher on Fromm on Saturday is that defensive front also has the potential to take away the Georgia running game at least a little bit. Here's a little more from Kirby.
I think they've got a tremendous front this year. You know, last year they had probably more depth, more guys up there. Still got a really good, quick, athletic front. They get off the ball really well. I mean, I've seen a lot of their defense because we've had games that we've played crossover teams, certainly explosive, quick, it'll be a challenge. I mean, it's hard to run the ball in the SEC, I keep telling y'all. It's something you got to be committed to. You've got to do it a lot, and you've got to try to wear people down. But they get off the ball. They do a really good job. They did last year as well.
Wouldn't surprise me at all if, because of that, this game stays closer at least a little longer than some people expect it to before Georgia maybe finally pulls away at the end. And when it does pull away, will Jake Fromm be the quarterback able to lead the Dogs in that direction? I believe that he will be, and certainly seeing some confidence coming from the Fromm family right now. After all the scuttlebutt on social media yesterday, I thought Lee Fromm, Jake Fromm's dad, had a terrific tweet kind of using an edit that a lot of Georgia fans have been passing around a lot lately. If you're watching them Facebook Live, you can see it. Kirby Smart wrestling the Gator. Jake Fromm behind him. He's got the Gator Hater t-shirt on, and Lee Fromm says on Twitter, time to go get a Gator. A lot of Dog fans would agree with him on that. We can't wait to watch that unfold on Saturday. It's great to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. We got a fun show coming up for you, including Jeff's Intel right now. Glad to have you with us.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And as we get ready to say hello to Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily, I remind you that our program today is brought to you in part by Georgia United Credit Union and the all-new Unified Checking Account, which gives you all the comforts of a free checking account with the options to earn more. It's a simple, convenient, rewarding checking account that fits your lifestyle. Visit GUCU.org for the terms and conditions that apply to this account, federally insured by NCUA. Jeff Sintel, good to have you with us. Looking forward to seeing you tonight, by the way, at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. And as I told our audience a little earlier, one of the special things about the night, in addition to having a chance to talk to you about the game against the Gators, we will have some red Gator Hater t-shirts to give away, Jeff, and I'm very excited about passing those along to a few folks tonight. Glad you're going to be there with us for that.
Well, first of all, Brandon, it's great to be here in Gator Hater Week on Dog Nation Daily. And, guys, if you can't tell it from these broadcasts, he's got some pep in his step. He's got a quickening of the pulse. He's got a very narrow slant. If I had a Mutual of Omaha voice, I would say the Dog Nation Daily podcaster stalks his prey, waiting to pounce on those Gators by the banks of the St. John's River. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. Yeah, and Jeff, there is no objective journalism on this show this week. There is no, what was the line that Fox News used to use, fair and balanced coverage? This is not fair and balanced coverage this week. This is all about a mission, I think, for Georgia fans who want to go into Jacksonville and get the win against the Gators. That's one of the reasons why we love bringing on reporters like you. You can give me the objective analysis. You can give me the hardcore journalism, the capital J journalism. On this show this week, we're talking about how to beat the Gators.
So this week it's going to be unfair and imbalanced. It's going to be sort of something like Charlie Brown voice where the reporter goes, wah, 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 wah. Hate the Gators, Gator haters, jean shorts, wah, 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 wah. Is that basically what your filter is going to be like this week, sir?
Yeah, there's a little something like that. I'm looking forward to doing more of that at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven with you tonight. But I guess we probably should deal with some serious stuff here for a moment, especially when it comes to UJ recruiting, because we obviously want to pick your brain about that. And if you don't mind, let me go back to the past. And for those people who thought we'd stop asking Justin Fields questions once Fields committed, obviously that's not going to be true, at least for a little while longer. As you reported last week, the broken finger for Fields ends his high school career. And what I thought was interesting about your kind of follow-up report to that is, you know, the few weeks that he's going to be dealing with this injury, enough to end his high school season, but from an athletic standpoint, he's going to be back doing something again as soon as the very end of the year, the very first of 2018, and we don't know if that's throwing a football or throwing a baseball in terms of the immediate, but while this may end his high school football career, Jeff, fair to say this is not going to slow him down athletically for very long, right?
No, it's just a broken finger. It was a very common break, a very common injury. And depending on how fast the young man can heal, if he heals anywhere the way he like runs a 40 or spins a football, then maybe that 6 weeks of healing time might shave down to 4 or 5 weeks of healing time. And then he might have anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks of physical therapy to get back in. I would say 10 to 12 weeks, which would probably put him, everybody do the math, all of November, all of December, a smidgen of October, and then a smidgen of January. He should probably be able to go. I don't know if he'll be able to play for the Under Armour All-American game or not. That's the first week of January, and that's going to be cutting it pretty close. But sooner or later, he's going to have to make that decision. He's got some big decisions coming up where the family tells me they're all day by day right now about Does he sign early with Georgia on December the 20th? Does he enroll early with Georgia on January the 8th or 9th? Or does he continue to be a student at Harrison High? All those options are available to him. He could also graduate early, and he could also play baseball in the spring for Harrison. Harrison's got a great program. They made the state's Final Four when Justin was a sophomore. And maybe that gives pro baseball scouts another measure of his worth if he decides to play high school baseball this spring.
So a lot of news to come here on the Fields front, including you mentioned the December 20th early signing period when that begins. Any kind of letter of intent from him wouldn't prohibit any decision he wants to make later on, right? I mean, he could still go the baseball route even if he signs, I'm talking about officially signs his letter of intent during the early signing period in December, right?
Yeah, all that's good because you can sign early even though, like, you want to be a normal enrollee. I think Jamari Sawyer is a good example here, how Pace does not allow its students, with its rigorous academic curriculum, Pace won't allow its students to graduate early. So Sawyer does plan to sign during the early period. He'll make his commitment on the 15th of December, and then he will sign on December the 20th. But he's not going to be showing up anywhere, you know, on a college campus as a player, as a student, until June, July of 2018. Whereas a guy like Fields can sign early, and he can sign to show up in mid-year, or he can sign to show up in June, July, kind of like Fields, kind of like Sawyer did right there in that example. The other thing he can do is, it's kind of a complicated labyrinth, but the best way I can say this is to throw out a term called parking draft rights, where Justin could be selected in the later rounds by a MLB franchise, and they could hold his rights for a sum of money if they come to terms. And they can hold his right until his junior year of college, his professional baseball rights. All the while, it would still allow him to play some college football at the same time. Now, the only time commitment he'd have to do with that sort of joining a major league professional baseball franchise is he'd owe him about maybe 40 days, 60 days, something like that, 45 days every summer to just kind of work on the skills, go through extended spring training, just so the organization can kind of see what he has in terms of tool development right there. Now, that's a possibility on the table, but I kind of think where I think this things might go, and I'm probably prefacing your natural follow-up question there, Brandon, is I think where things might go is he might just work on those baseball skills on the side at Georgia, and just to kind of maintain his ability there and not maybe actually be on the Georgia baseball team. Mm-hmm. Of course, out of all things, if he's going to try and chase down a starting job at Georgia, all these commitments to baseball, all these attachments to baseball would be counterproductive to that. Because I can assure you, if Jake Fromm holds on to the job at Georgia, Justin Fields is tremendously talented, but he's going to have to work his tail end off in order to catch up with what Jake Fromm is doing for Georgia in the film room and then off-season workouts as well.
Good information on that, Jeff. We appreciate you shedding some light on that. Let me transition to something else that's a little bit more of a debate. You had a list recently, and this actually kind of piggybacks off something we talked about on Friday, because we always joke here after a big commitment, the Dawg fans kind of enjoy that for, like, you know, and on the field, the coaches talk about the 24-hour rule. Georgia fans have about a 30-second rule for celebrating commits. Then it's moving on to who's next. And you kind of had your list of not necessarily who would be next to commit, but who those priorities were after Adam Anderson kind of came into the fold at the end of last week. And one of the names you included, not an official top five, I wouldn't say, but it was five or so names. And one of the names you put in there was Robert Cooper, the defensive lineman from South Gwinnett, at the exclusion of maybe a couple other guys that you could have put in. And I saw there was some social media discussion on that, people saying, Jeff, it shouldn't have been Cooper, it should have been this guy, or it should have been that guy. And that's a fun debate. I like being a part of that. But in this particular case, I think you're right to prioritize Cooper over some other names. Not because he's the only guy I think Georgia should want, but when you compare him to a Reese, or you compare him to, you know, whoever else people want to compare to, defensive tackle is such a thin spot nationally, and frankly, even a thin spot in the state of Georgia this year. If you've got a four-star guy in your state, you can't let him go out of state. Jeff, I'm going to put Cooper very near the top of what I think Georgia's priorities ought to be for the end of the season, the end of this recruiting cycle, and I frankly was glad to see you kind of put him in your very short list of sort of next wave of big names for Georgia, and I was hoping you might expound upon that a little bit more.
Yeah, that's always very interesting. I kind of look at that by a few tenets, and one of those is maybe what kind of groceries that mama has in the cupboard, so to speak, or what she has in the kitchen pantry. So, you know, that was really hard. I put Cooper at number five. That's behind some huge names like number one Jamari Sawyer, number two Tyson Campbell, number three KJ Henry, number four Trey Hill. And then I put Cooper at number five. And I know a lot of people would wonder, like, okay, Jeff, what are you doing there? Otis Reese, Channing Tindall, Luke Ford, James Cook. You know, I look at even like Tindall and Reese, for example, and I see a guy like Monty Rice doing well right now. I see a guy like Nate McBride in the program and a commitment right now like Aaron Brule out of Louisiana. And I see Luke Ford is a very elite tight end, and Georgia really didn't sign anyone like him in the 2017 class. I see James Cook, he's special, but then I see, you know, Zamir, DeAndre Swift, Elijah Holyfield, Brian Herrien. What I don't see is anyone quite like Robert Cooper. And I mean, Cooper is a kid that's about 6'2 and a half, about 360. He's going to bench press about 440 and a Buick for you in the weight room. But what he does have is he has cat quick like reflexes. You know, like Brandon, when we finally say, Brandon, it's time to get on the road and go to Jacksonville for the game, how quickly you jump off that Dog Nation daily desk is about how quickly Robert Cooper gets through A gap and B gap when he needs to. And the other thing is Georgia didn't sign a big hulking defensive tackle or a defensive tackle at all for that matter in 2017. And the other thing I think about him is Georgia has two really good thoughts at defensive tackle right now. That's Devontae Wyatt, the re-signed from 2017, who's more of an edge speed rusher. And then they've got Tramell Walthour, but nobody there is 6'2", 360. And if you've listened to me on this program a lot and often enough, I've always felt the way Georgia gets to where all those fans that already have yearly reservations in Fernandina and St. Simons and St. George and Sea Island, where Georgia needs to be is they need to build their teams like Kirby Smart and Sam Pittman have done from the inside out. Oh, yeah. Georgia's always gotten the skill guys. They've just never gotten the monsters like a Robert Cooper. And I'm always going to value a line of scrimmage guy in the trenches, especially one who carries the nickname Trench Monster, over maybe a tight end, an inside linebacker here, a safety there, or a running back there. I just think that Cooper, and maybe the bottom line for Cooper is all those things I just said right there. But the other thing is he's a kid from Georgia. Mm-hmm. And if you saw that graphic Kirby Smart tweeted out when Georgia got the commitment from Adam Anderson, it was the picture of a state. It was a lock and chain around the state of Georgia. And they've just got to lock down those elite guys in the state of Georgia if they want to have an Alabama-ish future, which I'm sure a lot of people that listen to this program every day sure hopes coming down the track.
But Dog fans also want the defensive tackles from other states as well. That's also Georgia fans want to keep their guys at home and go to other states and get their guys, which leads me to another defensive tackle, Rick Sandage. And Phil Kornblut, a reporter in South Carolina, has tweeted out that Sandage is taking an unofficial visit next Saturday for the South Carolina game in Athens. If you had to guess, and I know it's unfair to kind of put you inside a young man's head, but if you had to guess, even though he'll be entertained by Georgia, is Sandage coming to watch the Dogs, or is he watching the Gamecocks, the other school that sort of thought to be, I guess, the leader for his services at the moment?
Well, I think that's probably the de facto unofficial leader for Rick Sandage. He's got some family ties to South Carolina, no doubt, and Will Muschamp has definitely made him a priority. I think it's just an opportunity for Rick to get the chance to see two of his top schools go at it up close. He gets to see how they're coached. He gets to see how they play. He gets to see how both schools kind of side by side in that comparison rotate their defensive linemen and rotate their guys and how they use their defensive tackles and how the guys are coached to play. I think it's an invaluable time for him to learn, but I think Rick Sandich has kind of changed a little bit for Georgia on the board. There's guys like Christian Barmore now. There's Trevor Trout as well. And then there's Robert Cooper. Mm-hmm. I think Rick is definitely still one of the top four defensive tackles that they hope to get. But I do think that South Carolina is just putting in some great work. You got to remember here, the comparison to programs here is I think Rick Sandich might end up as the marquee recruit or perhaps maybe one of the top two or three recruits by any stretch of the imagination for South Carolina this year. But when you look at him on the Georgia board, it's, I think, number seven nationally after Florida picked up a commitment on Friday. I think definitely he's just not as big a fish for Georgia, even though that is a tremendous position of need. I do think that the Sandage unofficial visit will probably also might likely be followed by an official visit as well. And the family does love a lot of things about Georgia, but they also do like those Gamecocks as well.
I want to bring folks in behind the curtain here for a moment and kind of tell a quick story if you don't mind. Last week you and I were driving to an event together and I was talking in the car and I was telling you how I thought the Tyson Summers was going to work at Georgia next season. I kind of already had him sort of penciled into some role and I was trying to figure out with you what role I thought Summers, who was Georgia Southern's coach up until a few days ago when he got fired, what role he might fill for Georgia next year. That's sometimes what we do. We kind of think ahead unofficially in our minds. But Jeff, I will admit something to you. While I kind of saw the Summers tenure at Georgia Southern coming to an end, the one thing that did not cross my mind until Seth Emerson wrote about this at the forum at forum.dognation.com a few days ago, it did not occur to me that Del McGee might be in line to potentially be a replacement for him at Georgia Southern. And I got to tell you, on behalf of a lot of Georgia fans, it is a gut punch to think that Georgia might lose McGee, who is absolutely deserving of a big job. He's well paid at Georgia, but this is a fast riser in the coaching industry. You know, McGee deserves a really good job, but I think Georgia fans are wanting to know from you right now, please tell them that the Dogs can hold on to McGee through this year.
Well, they're going to have to, because everybody, I think Seth even provided, or maybe one of our astute forum readers provided the numbers and everything else. And, Del McGee is a family man, no doubt about that. But his career has kind of mirrored a little bit of how things have gone for Frank Wilson. That's the incredible running backs coach and recruiting coordinator for LSU for a long time. Who eventually took a head job with the Roadrunners, I believe, of University of Texas San Antonio.
Sure.
And he's a head coach now at the college level. But if you just look what Del McGee has put together, I mean, he reeled in Swift in 2017. He had Tenille Carter. Everybody knows how that worked out. But now in this class, he's kind of the recruiter of record for guys like Azeez Ojulari, that Justin Fields kid that we talk about from time to time. Zamir White, also James Cook. Del's also in on a lot of other guys as well as a secondary. He's majorly a guy that's around Cobb County a lot and Marietta. But with Del and what he's built at Georgia, what Georgia is building on offense in that running back room and in that offensive personnel groupings right now, if there's ever a point where you can consider Fields as the quarterback with Zamir and obviously DeAndre Swift in the backfield. I think that's a bright, bright future for Georgia. I think it's a special future for Georgia. And for a guy that recruited all those guys, I can see if the money matches up, I think Georgia Southern was paying Summers about $500,000 a year. I think Dell makes somewhere around $350,000 a year right now at Georgia. I think he's one of the preeminent skill position recruiters in the country. I can definitely see Del McGee's net compensation package going up for Georgia after this year. Probably if Georgia gets him in that $500,000 range, I think he's probably going to stick around and see what Georgia can be over these next 3 or 4 years rather than taking that jump to be a head coach at Georgia Southern. Everybody remembers he was the interim coach a few years ago for Georgia Southern for a measure of time, and then he did not get the opportunity to be the head coach there going forward. So I think that will also come into play as well, Brandon.
I was watching your recruiting show last night on the Dog Nation Facebook page. Now, this is not the same thing as the Kroger Wednesday night Facebook Live that you do. That's going to keep going the way it always has. This is a new thing that you were doing with our buddy Hannah Chalker last night on the Dog Nation Facebook page. I thought it was a really fun show. But one of the things in particular that kind of stood out to me about your show was near the end of the broadcast, you provided a little bit of a teaser, almost like a movie trailer, if you will, for a really cool documentary series that I guess you're doing with Jamari Sawyer, the five-star offensive lineman. I know a lot about Sawyer, but I don't know a lot about this video series. Could you tell me a little bit more about what this is going to be like and when we can see future episodes of this and just kind of what to expect from you and Sawyer kind of teaming up on what looks to be a pretty cool venture here?
Yeah, we've, first of all, big shout out, big tip of the cap to everything. Pace Academy, that coaching staff's first class, they've given us some pretty good access to Jamari so far, because I think everybody realized this is maybe a once in a decade type player, at least in terms of Jamari. You know, the recruiting rankings have him as the highest rated interior offensive lineman in the last 22 years. That's nice. He's the number one offensive guard this year. He's the highest rated offensive lineman in general this year. So those are all nice little bullet points. But aside from that, you have a remarkable young man who is a great communicator. This stuff matters to him. Everybody saw the first episode where you could really sum up why Jamari goes so hard with a phrase, just trying to buy my mom a house. That's what Jamari's going to be. That's what he's been. And that's what he's always going to be about until he buys his mama a house. And we get a really intimate look at Jamari. We're going to see him through the prism of his classmates, some of his teachers, the coaches that have molded him into who he is. But you also see a young man that likes to have fun. You saw him hooting and hollering and hooping it up in that trailer before they ran through the banner. But you also see, we're in the editing bay a lot of times, and you see kind of a smoldering between that Hulk mode and that, people sometimes call it gentle giant, but I just call it an intellectual giant sometimes with Jamari. The points he makes, the way he shapes and polishes his points. There's really one good passage that'll be in the documentary for sure, where he talks about how his Pace Academy curriculum has taught him all the social aspects, the football aspects, the hard work aspects, Brandon, but it also showed him through peer interaction what it was like if you ever have to talk to the parents of one of your friends, and the friend's parents just happen to be millionaires. And I think a lot of those interactions and a lot of that upbringing has shaped him into a guy that I know this is a treacherous ledge to get on, and it might be getting out in front of your skis if we were on the, if we were water skiing or something like that, Brandon, but this is a guy I see as a can't-miss student-athlete in college.
Yeah, Jeff, I know what you're saying there, and I was, you know, sometimes you and I joke about, like, nicknames for guys, what their nicknames should be. If I had to come up with a nickname for Jamari Sawyer, I think I might call him the Index Fund, because those people who follow investing know that, you know, index funds, they're going to go up every year. We don't know what their value is going to be from year to year, but we know it's going north. I mean, Jamari Sawyer, when you watch the video we were just showing on Facebook Live, and when you hear the description you're giving, I mean, Jamari Sawyer is sort of the index fund of high school football recruits. This is a guy who is absolutely heading in a positive direction based on, you know, the description you've used, other people have used. It'd be hard to find a surer thing out there than what Sawyer seems to be bringing to the table.
Yeah, if anybody wants to get on the Jamari chain, I'm sure it was kind of like what, you know, that Steve Jobs biopic movie that came out a couple of years ago when he was trying to talk about Apple IIcs and Apple IIes, and, you know, they start introducing the concept of personal computers and then iPads and iPhones and everything else. Jamari's kind of on that upward curve.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, Jeff, we'll look forward to seeing you tonight. Marlowe's in Brookhaven for our Dog Nation Invasion big game preview coming up this Saturday in Jacksonville, and also a chance to give away some red Gator Hater t-shirts. I cannot wait to just paper Jacksonville with these things over the course of the next few days. Thanks for being with us tonight. We'll look forward to seeing you. And, of course, thanks for being with us here today on Dog Nation Daily as well.
Brandon, are we going to dance above our chairs like Georgia and Noshon Marino, that touchdown after the end of our show today? Are we going to do something like that?
Maybe so. Crank up a little
back.
Crank up a little Soldier Boy, maybe. Crank up a little Soldier Boy. Maybe we'll get it going here.
Party in the end zone, man. No doubt about that, man. I'll see you tonight, Brandon.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So is calling Jamari Sawyer the index fund, is that too abstract? I think that could actually work as a nickname. Maybe not as much as I think, but I kind of like that one a little bit. Of course, always love having Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily. And by the way, speaking of our Dog Nation invasion to Jacksonville, it's brought to you in part by our friends at Kroger, who reminds you that it's Halloween time right now. And y'all, quick story here, we'll get on to our SEC through. So on Saturday night, I take my family to Kroger, because you got to realize, we didn't have a football game on Saturday, no UGA game. So we were doing a family day, and we asked our kids what they wanted to do, and they wanted to go buy Halloween candy. So the place to go for the Halloween candies, right there at Kroger. Well, we get there, and it turns into this free-for-all. This was like one of those sort of supermarket sweep type, you know, shopping spree type deals. Both my kids had their own shopping cart. They're throwing candy in there. They're getting decorations. My son's obsessed with these scary Halloween decorations. My two-year-old daughter hates them. My son likes them even more because she hates them. And so they're both just throwing everything they can. Our house has, like, been taken over by Halloween. It's all thanks to Kroger. And by the way, if you haven't gotten your Halloween candy yet, or pretty much anything you need to make your Halloween fun, Kroger the place to go for that. And use the Kroger click list. You'll be able to get in, get out much faster, much quicker. It is the best, easiest way to buy your groceries. Check out Kroger.com for more information on the Kroger click list. And we sure enough did have a really good time there on Saturday night. Let me transition, though, to our SEC through. We'll see you this afternoon on SEC Country Live, presented by AT&T on the SEC Country Facebook page. One of the stories we'll probably get into is what Alabama quarterback Greg McElroy, he goes on the radio station WJOX. That's the big sports talk station in Birmingham. And McElroy, even though he's a former Alabama quarterback, does kind of, you know, pay some credence to what some of Alabama's critics are saying right now. You saw the Danny Cannell thing from yesterday. We talked about this on AT&T SEC Country Live yesterday, that Alabama has got the weakest resume of all the teams potentially vying for a college football playoff spot. When McElroy goes on the sports radio station in Birmingham yesterday, he says, you know, there is a point to this, that really who has Alabama played thus far in the season. Now, the reason why I bring this up is kind of twofold here. On the one hand, you almost have to kind of wonder, you know, what is McElroy doing here, kind of voicing the opposition's viewpoint here? It's not McElroy's job to talk bad about Alabama. This is the job of the trolls like Danny Cannell to say bad things about the Crimson Tide. Or maybe on the flip side of that, it just shows the courage of McElroy to say something bad about Alabama on an Alabama sports radio station. You know, for me, I joked with Jeff about this a little earlier. I actually somewhat find objectivity to be overrated. I sort of find that to be the kind of thing, and Aaron Murray kind of ran into this the other day. Hey, I'm giving you objective analysis. I'm going to say George's going to lose a football game. Even if you think that's true, even if it turns out to be true, how much do you really gain by saying that? Greg McElroy, you know, sort of sounding like Danny Cannell on a Alabama sports radio station, how much does he gain by going out there and doing that? You know, it's the Alabama fandom that kind of got him to where he is. And while I have kind of argued against Alabama winning the national championship, I also don't necessarily know that I think that Alabama's resume is all that thin. The one thing that Alabama has going for it is not only is it winning its games, but it's winning its games by a convincing margin. For me, that's going to be always the biggest argument to make for why one team's in belonging in the playoff conversation. A very different discussion going on in Knoxville, Tennessee right now. Even though Butch Jones is still the head coach of Tennessee, and apparently going to be that as long as he can. He's going to try to beat Kentucky on Saturday and see if he can hold on to that job a little longer. The conversation around the Tennessee program has fully shifted into whose replacement going to be. Who's that guy going to be? You have the betting market talking about John Gruden here. That's obviously a name that's popular with Vols fans because of his connection to Tennessee. Gruden's been a landowner in that state for a while. He's got a son that goes to the University of Tennessee. Gruden has always been a name that seems to make sense to a lot of Tennessee people. You had Paul Feinbaum on his radio show yesterday kind of throw out the notion of Dan Mullen being that next coach. I think what's going to be important for Tennessee here is, in some way or another, I mean, Butch Jones, I think, is supposed to lose his job. I would have already dropped the axe on him if I was Tennessee. Obviously, Dog fans would like to see him stay employed as long as he can. But the job here is going to be to get him removed and get him out before schools like Arkansas or other SEC schools kind of do the same thing. You don't want to be competing with a bunch of other SEC schools for coaches, whether they be young up-and-comers or the big names that are out there. You want to put yourself in line first to be, you know, right of first refusal with those big names. We'll see if Tennessee does that. Jim McElwain, the Florida coach, speaking of drama on the Florida program from early in the show, he also had to shoot down some rumors yesterday. There was a CBS Sports report about him the other day, maybe considering taking another job. McElwain says he's not interested in that, but it's just more trouble for a Florida program here on the heels of two losses, the bye week doing very little to kind of quiet some of the critics for McElwain there in that program. An unusual situation for a guy that's won the East 2 years in a row, but that is the situation there at Florida. And then one quick final SEC story I want to get to for the SEC through. Thought that ESPN personality Reese Davis had an interesting statement to make when he filled out his own top 25. He's putting Mississippi State right now in his ranking ahead of LSU. Now, that's different than the rest of college football would be at the moment because LSU is hot. But the one thing that Davis remembers is when these two teams played not all that long ago, it was actually Mississippi State who got the convincing win. And I think that Davis' argument here on this one is a good one. And this is also relevant for Georgia fans who are seeing Mississippi State after a couple bad games, the game to Georgia, the game to Auburn, all of a sudden round back into form. And it's that MSU wins that they've gotten lately, including the one against LSU, that actually beefs up the Georgia resume a little bit. And it's kind of nice to seeing an ESPN personality kind of notice that. We'll make that your SEC through. All right, let's do now here on Dog Nation Daily, like we have done every day around this time for the last few days. I've been telling you about our Gator Hater roll call. You know, here on Dog Nation Daily, I've always said that good Georgia fans are Gator haters first and foremost. That the game coming up on Saturday is supposed to be the rivalry that matters more than any other. And I wanted to show that I'm not the only Georgia fan that feels that way. Yes, right now I'm the only Georgia fan that has a red Gator Hater t-shirt, but I'm not the only Gator Hater out there. Many of you have been reaching out to me on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily to kind of share your own Gator Hater credentials, including Jason Duane kind of making fun of the Florida credit card scandal with his Albert the Alligator Florida credit card here. IDs required in our establishment. Pretty funny stuff from him on that. You had a guy reach out to us showing the Dog Nation gear at the ESPN College Game Day last week in State College. Appreciate him kind of sending that. Mr. Williams there on Twitter sharing that with us. We appreciate that. Our buddy Evil Mel Tucker on Twitter making a meme out of Kirby Smart from Harrison last week. He says, I'm here to eat popcorn, beat Florida, and I'm about to be all out of popcorn. First of all, it's just a funny picture of Kirby eating the popcorn there at Harrison last week watching Justin Fields game, and Evil Mel Tucker, a great account to follow on Twitter as well. Appreciate that. How about a young Gator hater here? It said, this Gator hater, this comes from at UGA1974 on Twitter. He says, this Gator hater's 10 now. So a young Gator hater, he's got his Georgia jersey on, a beat Florida pin. He's holding his alligator, and he's biting down on that alligator. Really good stuff from at UGA1974 on Twitter. We appreciate that. Timothy Gillian also sharing a meme that says Gator season opens 10/28/27, and it shows a gator kind of hanging like it's been caught by a hunter. It says coach is getting the dogs ready to go hunting. Hashtag Gator hater Timothy. We appreciate you sharing that. We have Jimmy Durham here who shows you a picture. I'm not so sure if this is appropriate or not, but I put it in here anyway. It's a competitive eater at like a hot dog eating contest, and he happens to have a Florida shirt on. And Jimmy sends this to say, hey, at Dog Nation Daily, found a Gator fan having dinner in Plano, Texas. Pretty funny. Hashtag Gator hater, hashtag dog on top. Brian, our buddy at GeorgiaBoy1900, who's always a great reader of Dog Nation, listener, viewer of Dog Nation Daily. How about this? He sends a picture of an old Georgia-Florida program from, I can't quite tell what year this is from, but it's a long time ago. Can we see what year this is from? I can't quite tell, but it's a really cool old Georgia-Florida program. Really cool stuff from Brian there. Appreciate him sending that. Julie Craig gives us a at Dog Nation Daily hashtag keep chopping, and she's got a meme that says the Gators are good, and the Georgia Bulldog says real good as he kind of pulls it out of its mouth after having eaten it. And Julie, I love the keep chopping hashtag because that's very much in keeping with what Georgia's trying to do this week, which is stay focused on the task at hand and not get caught up in whatever the drama that Florida may be a part of with Jim McElwain, his remarks to the media, and kind of weirdness from the Florida athletic office after what McElwain had to say, or the Florida players like Chauncey Gardner, you know, talking trash and, you know, challenging Jake Fromm and other guys who, you know, said that Georgia still can't go out and beat Florida. This is exactly what you would expect from Florida because this is the kind of thing that Jim McElwain allows for that program. And frankly, it's blown up on Florida in the past, and it's a wonder that McElwain doesn't at some point in time kind of crack down on stuff like this. I mean, remember what Mark Thompson, the Florida running back, said before the game against Michigan, that he was looking forward to seeing his team beat the brakes off of Michigan. And that's very similar to what you heard some of the Florida players say yesterday. But the fact of the matter is, look how poorly that worked out for Thompson in Florida against Michigan. The only team this year that Michigan's looked any good against was against Florida, and the trash talk didn't help the Gators there. And that one, my guess is, it doesn't help the Gators against Georgia either, and it's kind of nice to see the Dogs kind of staying above the fray when it comes to stuff like that. All right, so as we wrap up here today, I actually want to, at least for a moment, turn my attention to a different game, because some of you may be surprised. Brett McMurphy, college football writer, used to be with ESPN, still writes about college football, just not with ESPN anymore, on Twitter had some look-ahead lines from the Las Vegas Superbook. That's the Westgate Sportsbook out in Las Vegas. This is for games over the course of the next few weeks, and the game involving Georgia that you might be surprised to hear is, according to the Superbook in Las Vegas, Georgia's still an underdog to Auburn right now. Auburn playing at home. Now, you get some consideration for being at home, but right now, Auburn, a 3-point favorite over Georgia, according to the Las Vegas Superbook. Now, is there room for that to change? Yes, there is. Obviously, Georgia's got a game against Florida and South Carolina to do whatever it's going to do. Auburn's got Texas A&M coming up here as well. There's room for that to change, but for Georgia fans already thinking about the next big road game for the Dogs, right now Vegas is calling UGA an underdog. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.